It's got a death curse.
Don't bother me, be like me. And then who will help you up in the sewer?
Just like having a wart removed.
What's the boogeyman?
As a matter of fact, it was.
I watched Night of the Living Dead was with you when we first started dating.
They're coming to get you, Barbara. Look, there's one of them now.
He'll hear you.
Here he comes now. I'm getting out of here.
I remember my one buddy saying, it's so old. It's so black and white. I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, it's a great movie. Like, just get past that. Just watch it. Let's just, like, watch the story. Watch how it unfolds.
It has been established that persons who have recently died have been returning to life and seeking human victims.
George Romero was as close as I am to any of you guys. It was still pretty cool. I mean, I was nervous as shit.
When there's no more room in hell, the dead will walk here.
This is not Cash's silver tongue to kill somebody. I brought it up, not him.
Your soul is damned. Nosferatu.
He has sex with the dead corpse.
You had to go there.
Well, the
corpse fucker!
Knowing what they are, we can begin to approach them properly, condition them, control them.
Even if they don't come up with any answers, the fact that they're looking for answers is fascinating, and the fact that they aren't finding any is terrifying.
I don't want them to do anything but drop over!
Yes, well, apparently they're not inclined to do that for you, Captain.
My favorite Romero film is and always will be Creepshow.
Creepshow with Tom Savini, Stephen King.
Love Creepshow.
Score it right now. Score this film.
9.5.
Oh my God! Yes. Wow. 9.5.
I've seen a thousand of them. He's gonna die.
The man was a fucking prince. He was a fucking prince among men, and you know, I don't think he had a bad bone in his body. I think he just wanted to tell a story. He wanted to be a smart story. And he appreciated gore.
It's given me a great career and a comfortable life and everything else. And so I can't really complain about it in that sense. And I do love it. I love the genre. So I don't know. It's cool.
In this case, was kind enough to break the rules and say, you know what, your fans, you got a show, and gave us a shout out. And for that kindness, that's why we're doing this tonight.
Hello, this is George Romero. You're listening to Horror 101.
This is Cash Wampum, your host of the Horror 101 show, welcoming you back a little sooner than I had anticipated. But recent events have forced our hands once again. So much for taking time off. We all know why we're here. The godfather of the living dead, George Romero, passed away last month at the age of 77. 2 minutes after I got the bad news, my Facebook immediately exploded with messages from friends and colleagues who pleaded for a Romero show. Not only that, they wanted to be involved with the recording. I don't care what night or what time you want to do it, you tell me and I'm there. That was the reaction I was getting. So here we are. Our 67th show has 9 of us participating. And keeping with our threequel theme, we did watch Day of the Dead, undoubtedly the part 3 of Romero's Undead Saga. This show is going to have a lot of discussion. We hope you enjoy it, so let's get to it. We got the usual cohorts, the world-famous Brian Stewart, the cult sensation Nick McPherson here, back from China's the most nefarious Paul B. For the first time since Deranged, we have the macabre Todd Gervais, and Elvis is in the fucking building! Yeah!
remember the last time I did this with you?
No. You know what? I was thinking about the last time, if ever, you were here. When was it?
It was another unfortunate death.
Was it Wes Craven?
It was Wes
Craven. You were here for Wes Craven.
I emailed you guys. Yes.
This is the first time, like, we've done Gunnar Hansen. We've done Christopher fucking Lee. We've done Wes Craven. We've done a whole bunch of horror icons who have passed away. But this one has really shaken the community.
It's hard for us here to believe what we're reporting to you, but it does seem to be a fact.
I was lucky enough to meet him three times. Each time in Toronto. And as an aside, the last time I met him was also the same time that I met Martin Landau, who died the same day as Romero.
Yes!
The first time I met him, it was when Rue Morgue was running the horror convention, part of Fan Expo, and it was their own separate thing. So I went up to him with both a Dawn poster and a Day poster, and admittedly shaking, you know, because this is a guy that I looked up to, and he couldn't have been nicer, he couldn't have been more welcoming, friendly. And he sat and he listened to me just, I'm sure there are questions he's heard a million and a half times before. But he didn't make me feel like he'd heard them a million and a half times before. It was, you know, for him, he made me feel like it was the first time he'd ever heard them. And he indulged me in all my stupid little questions. And, you know, and it's that kind of a thing that it makes me enjoy the movies that much more because he was that welcoming.
I'm making the films principally for the fans of the genre and people that really want to have a good gutsy horror film. No pun intended.
I saw him, it was 2 years ago at the Fan Expo, and sadly, there was absolutely nobody in line to see him, and it was shocking.
Really? That doesn't make sense at all.
I was floored. I went there, I had a VIP pass, so I had carte blanche to go straight up to any celebrity I wanted, and there was just no need for it, because nobody was waiting to talk to him. I walked right up to his table, and I told him what a fan we were, and I said, you know, we do this podcast at a Windsor, and we just, you know, we love your movies. And I told him we'd just done Creepshow, because we had just done that last time you were down, a couple years back when you were with us. And I got him to sign a Creepshow poster, and I asked if he could make it out to Brian. Because normally, most celebrities, they want to write something to it, so they know you're not going to turn around and go sell it on eBay.
Right, yeah.
And he said, we're not allowed to. Apparently, somebody had told him he's not supposed to personalize them. And he kind of looked one way, then looked the other, and says, you know what, it's okay, what's your name? And the real reason that they didn't want him signing people's names was because his hands were shaking. Oh. He was doing so poor that he couldn't write. And so I have, it's sad to say, rather scribbled to Brian and George Romero across my Creepshow poster. But then in turn, the same year, you got a Dave Terriel, a friend of ours, got him to sign a script for Night of the Living Dead for Todd for your anniversary.
No, the Day of the Dead. We got to get a picture of that. We'll get a picture of all of us with that script.
So yeah, at the same time he signed that screenplay for you too and made it out to you and personalized it. And what a generous, really nice guy, and gave us the shout out, which a lot of people weren't willing to do.
In the mid-60s, 10 friends from Pittsburgh who had a small amount of video experience but a great sense of passion for the medium all agreed to throw together 600 of their own dollars, creating a pool of $6,000 in order to begin production of their very own feature film. This was the genesis of a project called Night of the Flesh Eaters. By the time the film was done, it was titled Night of the Living Dead.
Well, you used to really be scared here.
Johnny!
You're still afraid.
Stop it now, I mean it!
I remember my one buddy saying, it's so old. It's so black and white. I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, it's a great movie. Like, just get past that. Just watch it. Let's like watch the story. Watch how it unfolds. But I watched it when I was 7. And I'll never forget this. This is the beginning for me. Night of the Living Dead was the beginning of the horror experience for me and my obsession with it. I had seen clips of like Friday the 13th and maybe Nightmare on Elm Street, but I don't remember ever getting through an entire movie or not knowing more than just some clips here and there when they're on TV. But my parents had just moved into the new house, right? And here I am, 7 years old, I'm downstairs, and my parents had just put in my waterbed. Remember when that was a thing?
Yeah.
Before they realized that made you sterile. But I'm sitting there in Shocktober. You remember that?
Well, yeah, WXON with Count Scary.
Yes, Count. What network was that?
WXON TV 20.
Thank you, TV 20. So Shocktober was playing Night of the Living Dead, and I saw the preview, and I'm like, what is this? This whole zombie or the concept of all this, I had no idea. And then you just saw that intro, you know, and then the car riding up, and I was like, well, I gotta watch this. And, you know, my mom coming in every now and then. Why are you going to watch this movie? This is stupid. Why are you... So, it's like, shut up, whatever. But no one ever says shut up to an Italian mother. That's a bad thing. So, but there's kind of a side effect of this was the chlorine in the plastic of that, the smell of that waterbed. Anytime I smell chlorine to this day, I think of Night of the Living Dead.
Oh, really?
It's automatic. It's like that association. That's awesome. Just automatically comes into my brain.
You've been conditioned.
But that was the first horror movie I think I actually sat all the way through and absorbed it, and I loved it, and I just couldn't think of anything else for months after that.
They're coming to get you, Barbara.
Stop it! You're ignorant.
They're coming for you, Barbara.
Stop it! You're acting like a child.
Look, they're coming for you. Look, there comes one of them now.
I do have a memory of Night of the Living Dead. The Channel 20 trailer came up, or whatever the channel was, came up. And it started with Bela Lugosi, you know, look into my eyes, that whole bit. But it ended on the scene in the clearing while the zombies are walking towards the farmhouse.
Of
Night of Living Dead. So it was a montage. And I remember it freaking my sister and I out so much to the point where we actually ran out of the hotel room screaming.
Oh, really?
Trying to find my parents in the park. So the next night when I was playing, my dad sat with me and we watched Night of the Living Dead with the commercial breaks and the whole bit. And I remember being terrified but loving it.
Why are space experts being consulted about an earthbound emergency? So far, all the betting on the answer to that question centers on the recent Explorer satellite shot to Venus. That satellite, you'll recall, started back to Earth, but never got here. That's the space vehicle which orbited Venus and then was purposely destroyed by NASA when scientists discovered it was carrying a mysterious high-level radiation with it. Could that radiation be somehow responsible for the wholesale murders we're now suffering?
To be honest, this is how I introduced myself to the Dead trilogy. I watched Dawn of the Dead first, Day of the Dead second, and then I went back and watched Night of the Living Dead as the third movie. So I kind of went back in time. I kind of regressed watching this series. And watching Night of the Living Dead again, I couldn't believe how much they were pointing. Like, he several times pretty much tell the audience, this is happening because of this probe that went around Venus, and then it came back with this radiation that they blew up in the atmosphere, and that's what was causing this shit. They mentioned it three or four times.
Sure. You're coming from a meeting regarding the explosion of the Venus probe, is that right, sir?
Yes, that was the subject of the meeting.
You feel there is a connection between this and the phenomenon?
There's a definite connection. A definite connection.
In other words, you feel that the radiation on the Venus probe is enough to cause these mutations?
There was a very high degree of radiation.
Well, just a minute. I'm not sure that that's certain at all. I don't think that
it's
has been
the only logical explanation that we have at this time.
And if you watch, it's even George Romero. He's in the film. He's the interviewer.
He's the television director.
He was the interviewer. Remember when they were watching TV?
Which one?
In Night of Living Dead.
Oh, Night. Yeah, they went in Dawn.
But he drops that in Dawn and Day. Like, it's gone. Like they go to the whole mysticism when there's no more room in hell, the dead will come back kind of shit.
I know what you're saying. They do reference it a few times, but I guess it's just you can draw your own conclusions to say, yes, was this probe? I mean, fine. You know, like, there's no proof. There's no real definitive way of presenting it.
No.
I've never viewed that as the reason. I just accept the fact that, much like a lot of these zombie movies, there's never an explanation, and that's not the point. It's never about the explanation, right?
Yeah, the third movie was all about them looking for an explanation and failing to find one.
Right, and that's, like you said, that's the terrifying part of this whole genre, is fucked.
Yeah.
There's no way out.
Repeating this latest bulletin just received moments ago from Cumberland, Maryland, civil defense authorities have told newsmen that murder victims show evidence of having been partially devoured by their murderers. Medical examination of victims' bodies shows conclusively that the killers are eating the flesh of the people they kill.
There was no MPAA when they made it. There was no censor board or anything like that. There was just like an unwritten rule of not crossing a certain line. But when they started showing these things dragging burnt corpses out of the truck and watching them eating them, that... everybody flipped out.
That
in
might have been right when my mom walked into the room.
Yeah, of course. Mom, this is the best part. They're eating people.
This is disgusting. What's wrong with you?
But yeah, people flipped out because I can't think of another movie that was that explicit. Usually, like, the idea or off-camera that something like this was happening was probably common by 68. But to actually have the zombies sit there in the
fighting,
fighting over entrails and biting down on legs and shit.
I remember stories of people running out of the theater or just throwing up or just... Yeah, that was a... That, nobody had seen anything
like
that.
That was in black and white.
Yeah. I mean, but let's not forget, this is a time when people's sensibilities were extremely tender. Mm-hmm. It wasn't long after that the first Exorcist movie came out.
Yeah.
People were, like, dying from heart attacks in the aisles.
If you box yourself in the cellar and those things get in the house, you've had it. At least up here you have a fighting chance.
What I love about The Man is that without waving a flag or anything else, he was concerned about social justice. These issues mattered to him. I mean, 1968, I'm not...
Yes,
no, that's right. Yeah. Night of the Living Dead comes out, he casts an African-American male lead. I mean, that was the year that Kirk had his...
First interracial kiss.
Yeah, first interracial kiss with Uhura. I mean, it was groundbreaking. Now, true, you could argue that he was a small film, and he wasn't expecting a lot of showing or whatever. It doesn't matter.
No.
I mean, just the thought of it was groundbreaking in its own way, in my opinion.
Dwayne Jones, who played Ben in the original, Romero has gone on to say that the reason he got the part is because he was the best actor of all of his friends.
Yeah. And that's all that matters. He basically said, I'm colorblind.
Yeah,
I didn't favor him because of the fact he was African American. I didn't not favor him because he was African American. He was just the best for the job.
The best,
and frankly, isn't that what it's all supposed to be about in the end, right? And the one thing I've heard people complain about him from the first movie is people saying that the female lead was absolutely useless, and that his portrayal of women based on that was very poor. And I think that he actually heard that criticism, because you take a look at the female lead in Day of the Dead, and you have this powerful, strong female protagonist.
Speaking of strong female protagonists, my wife, the lovely Nude, as soon as she heard that there was going to be six of us sitting in a room podcasting, she's like, I'm out. I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about? You're out. And she made a point. She's like, listen, when it's you and Nick and Brian, I hardly get a fucking word in edgewise. And she's right. We kind of dominate the airspace. And we've apologized to her, but we get very passionate when we record these. So she's anticipating six of us. She's not going to be able to say anything. So I made her a deal. Here's what we'll do. We will set up our own little recording. Just you and I. We'll watch a couple of Romero flicks, talk about them. That way I can cut you in and you can be part of the show. She loved the idea, so that's what we're going to go to right now.
The first time I watched Night of the Living Dead was with you when we first started dating.
You never watched Night of the Living Dead before me?
No.
But you were a horror fan. How you be a horror fan and not watch it?
Well, that's the thing. You know, if I watched it, I was probably really too young and I didn't know a lot about it. So my horror, I guess, repertoire expanded when I met you.
I can't tell you how many films, particularly horror films, I had watched growing up where Night of the Living Dead is on the TV. Like Halloween 2. I remember being a kid watching Halloween 2. The old man at the beginning of the movie is falling asleep in front of the television. They're watching Night of the Living Dead. Night of the Living Dead, they're coming to get you, Barbara. That's quoted everywhere. Yeah. You know, like the pop culture alone sparked just from the beginning of that film. And I'm pretty sure Night of the Living Dead, I think it's still in the public domain. Like, you can, if you wanted to, you could show it.
Oh, wow.
I don't think anybody's picked it up. I think it's still in the public domain. So you can air it on. And this is why you probably saw it. Like, WXON always had it playing. Mm-hmm. You know, it's always like a late night feature or something like that. Halloween. It'll always be on television because they don't have to pay any rights to show the original Night of the Living Dead.
From the director of Night of the Living Dead, Martin, another kind of terror.
I just have a sickness. I just need to drink blood.
Your soul is damned, Nosferatu!
What do you think of Martin Pants?
I liked it, actually.
It was different.
Pretty messed up kid.
Yeah, was he or wasn't he a vampire?
Who knows?
Was he 84 years old or what the fuck?
Well, he says he was 84 years old.
And you had those memories of him in like black and white days.
Yeah, being chased. And it, how old are you? 84, without even blinking. But then the, on the other side, he says all those are, the magic is not true. So the cross doesn't work on him. The holy water doesn't work on him. The garlic doesn't work on him. So what is he?
He's a creepy motherfucker.
Vampire. First, I will save your soul. Then, I will destroy you.
So he uses syringes filled with blood to subdue his victims.
It's not filled with blood.
No. Syringes filled with drugs. So he uses syringes filled with drugs to subdue his victims, and then slices their wrists and drinks their blood.
And then I think he has sex with the dead corpse.
You had to go there.
Well,
you had to go there, Helen.
Up until he mentioned having sexy time with the live woman, he said it's better than after
somebody who's awake.
Yes.
Yeah, oh, we're doing it with somebody who's awake.
So it's like
sexy time.
Ew.
Corpse fucker.
You may come and go, but you will not take people from the city. If I hear of it a single time, I will destroy you without salvation.
What do you think of the old grandfather there?
Oh, over the top.
Christian, yeah. Catholic.
Yeah, over the top.
As long as it doesn't get crazy. Sometimes they get crazy.
How old are you, Mike?
Well, I'm old.
How old?
84.
Of course, he wasn't even guilty of the one who actually really killed her.
The fluke who gets you. He shows up, hey, what's going on? I want to talk. She's dead.
Oh.
Taking her own life with his M.O.
Yeah.
And grandfather's like, your soul is damned, Nosferatu. Yeah,
I warned you, nobody in this town. And it's karma, right? Sorry, vampire.
Now he's pushing up daisies.
Yeah.
So, to wrap things up, what does Romero mean to you? Now that he's gone, you've had a chance to reflect on a couple of his films. What does he mean to you, nude?
Like I said before, the introduction to the zombies as we know them this day and age. Yeah, I'm sure there are different versions, but I think he opened the doors for a lot of our new age directors, producers, writers. And from that, his idea of a zombie, everything else kind of just developed and, I don't say graduated, but what's the word am I looking for?
Evolved?
Evolved, enhanced, that sort of thing. I'd say he started it all. I'm very happy that he did. It's very sad that he's no longer with us. And hopefully we've done, you know, his memory justice with what we're doing.
I emailed you about 2 weeks ago, or just before I came back.
Right.
Saying that we had to get together to do, as part of your trilogy thing.
Yes.
Day of the Dead. Which isn't necessarily a trilogy, but it is a third part of a series.
You know what? If I went back into all the audio that we've been doing ever since we thought of this idea, Day of the Dead's been thrown around. Oh, not because we've been doing movies that are like this, part three. Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Nightmare on Elm Street, House, all that.
A continuation of a story.
To me, though, Day of the Dead, it makes sense. It's the third Romero Dead film.
Right, but it's different in the fact that it doesn't have any of the same characters. It doesn't have any of the same setting.
It
does have the same main character, and the main character is the zombies. Right? What we're seeing is the effect of this natural disaster being the zombies.
Right.
And then the protagonists from film to film and the antagonists are the groups of humans who are suffering the stress and duress of dealing with this new reality. So in some ways, no. I would argue that the zombies, and specifically Romero's zombies, because they were groundbreaking the way he envisioned these creatures, They were as much a part of the story as any of the characters with speaking lines.
Another reason why I would suggest Day of the Dead is like Night of the Living Dead Part 3 is that the story progresses. Mm-hmm. You know, you have different characters, and yes, it's all a zombie film, but the first one is the very beginning. Dawn of the Dead is like the next couple of days, and Day of the Dead is a few months down the road where the fucking fittest hit the shan, and most of humanity is gone. Jump in here, Nick.
Well, yeah, they didn't really hamstring themselves with continuity. It was more or less like they expect you to just forgive the fact that it, you know, they're decades apart from each other. You know, the implication is this is all in the same world, the same shit's happening. This isn't like three completely separate zombie movies. Mm-hmm. You know, but it just seemed like rather than do a period thing and just like make them all back in the 60s, they just went with what they had. Because then again, you know, budgets being what they were, making period pieces is expensive as fuck.
First came the night, then came the dawn. Now comes the most eagerly awaited day in horror film history. George A. Romero's Day of the Dead.
I honestly don't think I've seen Day.
I'm surprised that you haven't, but yeah. If you haven't, you're in for
a
treat.
You're in for a huge treat. Like this, Romero himself said it best. He goes, you know, most people who like film like Day, but the real, or like Dawn, but the real gore hounds, the real ghouls are the ones who
the
like
trolls.
Day.
Yeah. He's like, you know what? The nostalgists love Night of the Living Dead because it was the first one.
Yes.
The intellectuals love Dawn of the Dead.
The filmies.
Like, you know, but the trolls love Day of the Dead because of all that gore.
No, the one I've seen most recently was Dawn. I watched that one again because when the remake came out, I was just like, it's been a while. I wanted, the original's so much better.
The first 5 minutes of Day of the Dead paints a really grim picture. Metropolises are now tombstones filled with zombies. Humanity is lost. And as soon as Tom Savini's jawless zombie shambles into the frame, eclipsing the sun, dripping tons of gore all over the place, you know exactly what kind of film you're in for.
I feel like I say this every time I watch a Savini film, but this is the pinnacle of what he did. Sure I've said that at every single time we watch a Savini film, but the gore in this is just the zombie when they're in the medical lab and he just turns over and all his innards pop out on the floor.
I'm really glad they reused that shot when she's sleeping and she has the nightmare, and it's the same shot because that would still be in the back of her mind.
Yeah,
to see her friend doing that, it was smart.
Yeah. And I remember you were with me when we met Savini. Like, this was, what, 20 years ago we met Savini? And I asked him, I'm like, of all the films you've done, which is the one that you're most proud of? He could have said Creepshow, he could have said Maniac, he could have said Friday the 13th, 1 or 4. He was like, Day of the Dead. And I'm like, yes, absolutely, yeah. Day of the Dead. Well, I mean, here, we're watching this film, 1985, it's in 1080p, DTS. I mean, the transfer was wonderful. And I forget who it was last time we watched it, one of you two. The makeup on Bob is spot on. You can't see
phenomenal.
A flaw in it.
Yeah.
Even at 1080p.
Well, you get the sense that Romero gave Savini carte blanche. Do what you want. Like, this is what I envision. You make it
work.
Yeah.
The brain is the engine, sir, the motor that drives them. They don't need any blood flow. Don't need any of their internal organs. Now, I've severed all the vital organs in this one. There's nothing left of the corpse but brain and limbs, and still it functions. Look, Sarah, look. See, it wants me. It wants food, but it has no stomach. It can take no nourishment from what it ingests. It's working on instinct, a deep, dark, primordial instinct.
The other thing I really appreciated about the third movie was the fact this is the first time they tried to analyze the mythology, the rules of what makes these zombies tick, how they work. How does it manifest? At what point do they stop being, you know, driven by their desire to eat others? Mm-hmm. They even get to the point where it's just basically a brain stem, isn't it?
Yeah, they carve away everything with the brain.
And it's still showing pulsing
Like showing out like synapses or firing teeth.
Yes. Fire.
They take out its innards and say, this thing cannot get any sustenance from eating, but it still wants to eat me.
Yeah. I mean, even if they don't come up with any answers, the fact that they're looking for answers is fascinating, and the fact that they aren't finding any is terrifying. So I like that aspect of it. Very few horror films ever try to really understand what makes the mythology tick.
Spick's been bit, Captain. We gotta blast him. He's been bit.
I got the infection in time.
That's bullshit, lady. I've seen 1,000 of them. He's gonna die.
I would say the biggest thing about the zombie world as we know it that kind of fucks with me is the fact, like, yeah, they're slow. If there's only a couple of them, I'm pretty sure that even an out of shape me could take them out with a bat or something. You know, any kind of blunt
getaway.
What bothers me is the fact that if their teeth puncture your flesh, you're done. In Romero's world,
and in some instances, if they scratch your skin too, right?
That
was added later, wasn't it?
It didn't matter how insignificant it was. If it bites you, you're dead. It's a death sentence. So whenever
there were never insignificant bites.
Not in Romero's.
Just the nibbles. Strong teeth, those zombies.
Day of the Dead gives you the story of a scientific team and its military counterpart set up in an underground bunker in Florida. At the beginning of the film, you get the feeling that tensions are high, with the new commander, Captain Rhodes, being one big piece of shit, and he's real pissed off that the scientific team his men are dying to help facilitate are coming up with zero useful information. We meet a special zombie named Bub, brilliantly played by Sherman Howard, who shows signs of being able to learn commands, understand interaction, and actually emote. This was the first time this was ever introduced in the Romero world. And of course, as with all Romero zombie films, the climax involves an onslaught of a zombie horde, this time with the gore effects wizard Tom Savini pulling out all the stops.
What's his name bites it, you can hear his voice, his pitch. I looked over his face and he's like,
that was Tasso. They're like, okay, they're gonna yank his head off really slowly, and you're gonna have him screaming, but as the head comes apart from the body, the vocal cords are gonna stretch. He's gone. And his mouth is still moving as they're dragging the head away from the eye sockets. Like, holy fuck, man, what a great effect.
Oh, how about peeling the grape?
Yeah, like a grape.
Yeah.
The eye's kind of like floating there. And he's still laughing. He's laughing about it. He's lost it. He's laughing, even as they're tearing him apart.
He was halfway there to that entire show.
Yeah. I did that.
And now, interesting story, when they shot that after their Christmas break. They had 2 weeks off before they shot that. The reason everything looks so fucking real in this movie is that Tom Savini used real guts, like real pig and intestines and shit like that.
Oh, it's not nice.
So they had
I can appreciate it. I didn't have to smell it.
They had a 50-pound drum of all this shit, and they put it in a freezer that somebody unplugged accidentally before they had a 2-week break. So this shit was sitting
rancid,
going rancid for 2 weeks, and they're like, okay, we got to shoot this scene. So all the zombies had shit up their nose, and this guy had to sit there for 4 hours while they set up this fucking shit. Stuck in a hole in the floor, smelling that shit.
If you watch the Blu-ray, the one that you were talking about before, the DVD Blu-ray.
There's the cutscene.
The cutscene when you see, like, once they cut, you see all the zombies just fanning his face because...
Oh, yeah, they're all like... Cut!
All the zombies are like, Jesus Christ!
they all wax up their nose where he couldn't because of the way the camera was set. So they all start fanning him immediately.
Oh, dear God.
So that was the first time you've ever seen this one.
I haven't seen it before.
You've never seen Day of the Dead.
I have never seen Day of the Dead.
Well, Your reaction. You know what? I looked over. The first 20 minutes, you had your phone going. I'm like, ah, give him a few. And then the last hour of the movie, you had a look on your face like, what the fuck's going to happen next? I'm like, he's hooked.
Did he? Did you catch the look on his face with Rhodes? That was... it was that right there.
He's hooked. So, come on, what do you think? Seriously.
I loved it.
1985.
Really?
1985, this film. What do we always say about 1985? The best year for horror in the 80s was 1985.
Maybe the best year for horror.
I can't believe I've never seen it either. I thought I'd seen them all.
Score it right now. Score this film.
9.5.
Oh my god, yes! 9.5! 9.5!
I thought you were going to smack him in the forehead and say, fuck him. 9.5! It's like go for the rubber stamp to smack it on the
floor. Is this your favorite out of the three, then?
Absolutely. Yeah, because, okay. Just like Romero said, he's like, the trolls.
You're a troll.
The trolls love Day of the Dead because of all that fucking gore. I mean, Dawn of the Dead's got some fairly decent gore in it, but Day of the Dead just pushes the envelope.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they wanted to give this guy $10 million to make a film that was rated R. They're like, make us a zombie film, Day of the Dead, whatever, but we'll give you $10 million,
Man, this is 1980s.
It's got to be rated R. It can't be unrated. And he's like, no, I need Tom Savini in here. I want to make it graphic because he was known for making these graphic zombie films. And they're like, okay, well, we'll give you $3 million. Do whatever you want. And this is the product. It was Day of the Dead.
Folks, we have a friend who's actually been in a Romero film. He was cast as an extra in Land of the Dead. He's had first-hand view of Romero and his team at work making a zombie film, and he delighted us by joining our recording and sharing his experience on set. This is my good friend and my old ghost hunting colleague, the BCW Wrestling Hall of Famer, Irish Bobby Clancy.
I invited Clancy here because he's the only one in this room who has actually been in a Romero film. This fucking guy right here was in Land of the Dead.
Nice.
He was in Land of the Dead.
3 seconds of fame, literally.
Did you get the newspaper that says the dead walk?
No, everybody who was in Day of the Dead, the film that we just finished, if you were a zombie, you got three things. You got a hat saying that I was a zombie. You got a newspaper that said dead walk, and you got a $1 bill. That's what people were paid to be a zombie in this film. And everybody loved... there was rock bands that were traveling 8 hours after a gig to be a zombie in this film. They didn't care what they would have paid to be a zombie, let alone get a dollar for the job. Mm-hmm. You know, they wanted in. So, Clancy... Tell us how this happened. How the hell did you get in this film? What did you do? What was it like? I want everything.
Just right place, right time. I'm very lucky. I got this idea in my mind I wanted to be in. I wanted to do some commercials and maybe movies or TV shows. Get myself an agent and see what happens. So after interviewing a few different scams up in Toronto, I found one place. I had to pay like $35 to be represented by them, however the hell this works. Maybe 2 weeks later, my agent, she had called and said, I got a movie, I got a fight scene for you to be in a zombie film. It was a two-day process. I literally slept in my van overnight just so I could be there for the next day to do continuity shots. There's got to be 1,000 extras along with myself. What was cool, where we're sitting, there was one spot, they had a tent up like a tarp, and they had a Jeep set up, and then they had a guy wearing a green screen shit. He was in a green screen outfit, and they had a zombie head rigged up that would bite this other guy, and then this green screen guy had something to do with it as well, because he was actually this head was a puppet, but he was holding these electronics, so I think he had something to do with that, best I can recall. And then next door to that scene, there was a pool, so they could film shots of when they're in the lake or whatever that is, in the river, up close of whoever. So there was some of that going on as well. And then another platform was set up, just like in the movie you guys are just watching. They had a guy set up with a few zombies around him. It was actually in the movie Land of the Dead, it was the scene where the guy is at the harbor and he's the guy on the skateboard, and they rip apart his guts like in this movie here, and they filmed that probably 100 times, where this guy was actually inside of a wooden block area. So his body was underneath the block, and you could see him kicking. He's just getting into his deal. moving along, and these guys are ripping his shit up over and over and over, which is pretty interesting. So all the while we're seeing this, while we're waiting for our shot. So eventually we get into this. There's an octagon cage, pardon me, in the middle of the room. And of course there was Asia Argenta. So I'm just like, I'm drooling. I'm like, who the fuck is that?
We can drink it, shoot it up, fuck it, gamble on it. Belongs to him.
She was obviously someone important. And Riley, the blonde lead guy, what's his real name?
Simon Baker.
Simon Baker.
The guy from The Mentalist.
He was fairly nice. And then Robert Joy, the guy who was in Madonna's movie. He's the guy with the half face, kind of melted, or what he almost looks like a zombie. Yeah. He was super nice. He was talking to everybody, just, you know, where you're from, what do you do, blah, blah, blah. So he was cool when we had time. But we probably shot, for the 3 seconds I got, we probably shot that 25 times at least. And what was cool, George Romero was as close as I am to any of you guys. You know, could I talk to him? No. It was still pretty cool. I mean, I was nervous as shit. I lucked out because as the night went on, you know, you start talking to people, you get more comfortable. Yeah, so I got my little 3 seconds of fame. I'm serving soup. You can't really tell. You can tell we're bartering. They're selling drugs. They're selling soup. They're selling all kinds of shit. And they're also buying, you know, people are placing bets. Because Asia Argenta, as you know, was in the middle. And you got your two massive zombies. They're huge guys. Everybody was betting on which zombie was going to eat her. And then Riley and the other guy come and save her. There's a big shootout, and we had to run around and all this stuff, like umpteen times. You get shots of people running and all that stuff. So it was cool. That was done over 2 days, as little as a scene it was done. Took 2 days to do.
I tell you, man, I mean, the cast was just absolutely cooperative. I mean, they were out in that cold, too. Nobody complained. You know, we would never have gotten what we got without the dedication of, you know, approximately 125 people.
So you watched Romero making the film, like you were there on set.
I was right there.
He was making directions. He was doing this, that, and the other thing. Did he have a smile on his face? Did he seem stressed? Did he seem like he was happy to be there?
He seemed like, I mean, I'm not saying he was sitting there with a smile on his face. He wasn't an unpleasant guy by any means. I mean, everybody, every time he spoke, I mean, everybody was laughing, you know, just on cue almost, just kissing his butt. But he had one guy, looked like Davy Jones, that was his right-hand man. I'm not sure who that was, but this guy, wherever George went, this guy was like 2 feet behind him. No, I mean, the guy, very tall man, too. I mean, head above most. I don't know if you guys know how tall he was, but he's pretty tall.
Yeah, he is tall.
Man. Man. He had his gray hair and a ponytail, those huge... The goggle glasses.
What's with the fucking glasses? Come on, what's with the fucking glasses on this guy?
Every time we saw a picture.
Every interview I see this guy, he's got no glasses on, but in his shirt pocket, he's got a glasses case that's the size of my fucking fist, just protruding out like 3 inches. And then when you see him wearing these fucking glasses, they're out the fucking year. Like, what's the deal with these glasses?
Everybody's gotta have a trademark.
Didn't you meet Simon Pegg on set?
Who's that?
Shaun of the Dead.
Yeah, you know what? Actually, thanks for reminding me. Just before you see me on it's like, because I know, 33 minutes in, the two gentlemen next to me, they're dressed up. The one has the classic, it's almost like a Boris Karloff type zombie makeup. And he's chained up. And people are getting their pictures with the zombies. And there's a dude next to him as well. And this guy in the Boris Karloff thing was actually, at one point we were on a break or whatever, was walking around. Anybody got a dollar for a zombie? He's going around. I just thought he's just another, I don't know who he is. When I see when I watch the movie, I watch the outtakes and all that, and they're interviewing the two guys from Shaun of the Dead. And I'd seen that movie, and I was kind of like, oh, that's cool. I wonder where they were. And then, holy shit, it was both them right next to me the whole time.
Nick Frost and Simon Pegg.
Just Edgar Wright. Thought they were normal, because I wasn't starstruck, and I just... normal people, right?
But so Nick Frost plays his character from Shaun of the Dead, Ed.
Yeah, so that's... So. They were right next to me, which is after the fact. Like, holy fuck. You know what I mean? That, I think, was the biggest deal.
Afterwards.
That was the biggest deal to me, was that.
We have a long-time listener. His name is Eugene. He's been on the show before. He wanted very much to be part of the Romero Show, so we had him call in and join us. I will apologize in advance. We had the gains up to the max on the recording mics to make sure everyone in the room came in loud and clear, and unfortunately, Eugene was peaking a bit while we talked to him, so he may seem a bit distorted. You'd think after 6 years I'd have this down to a science, but you know...
I make this show out of my basement. I'm only human, you know.
Screw you for judging me!
How dare you judge my work?
Eugene, you've been a listener of this show for the longest time. We value your opinion. What does George Romero mean to you? Now that he's gone, reflecting on him, share your feelings about the man, please.
George is the reason I got into horror.
You know, that's...
For a long time, I convinced myself I did not like horror movies. I started reading the Walking Dead comic, and I thought, I should probably give zombie movies a try. So you go and you look up what's the best zombie movie to see. Dawn of the Dead is always number one. I watched it, and I could not believe what I got out of it. It was social commentary plus the zombies. There was so much to see, so much to experience there. And then you go look him up on IMDb, you see all these other movies, and they're all so different from what you expect from a normal horror movie. Which is why I love Martin so much, because it's not your normal vampire movie. Completely different. And it blew my mind. Everything I've seen from him is so different from what you expect. It's just, I can't help but love it all.
Your favorite Romero film?
My favorite one? It's going to be Dawn of the Dead.
Yeah.
But I have a special love for Martin and the Crazies, just because they're the ones that he doesn't get as much overall recognition for, and there's just so much different about them.
Eugene, we're going to close up shop, so I'm going to allow you to close out. Imagine that Romero's in this room with us right now. I want you to... What would you say to him if you had a moment right before he's gone? What would you say to Romero?
I would just have to say, thank you, sir. You have made, you've set the path for me to watch horror movies and try to catch up to Mr. Cash Wampum in terms of watching films, but just thank you. You've done so much for the horror genre. You've done more. You've changed things. Everyone's following you. Thank you.
Hey, you know what? I've created a fucking monster. I've been saying this for years. Like, when I first got you involved in this, you're like, oh, horror, I'll give it a try. Every other day, Eugene hasn't seen this. Eugene hasn't seen that. And then you go ahead and watch the movie, and then you post about what you think about this film. You're watching 1,000 fucking horror movies a year now. How come you're not doing your own podcast, for fuck's sake?
Because I just don't have the ability to do all the editing and everything. If I was going to have one, it would be called Eugene Hasn't Seen, obviously.
And I think you should.
That's a great title.
Oh, and by the way, to keep up with the year of threes, this is my third appearance.
What are the other two?
My other two, Wes Craven and What Scares You.
That's right. What Scares You?
The 20th or the 25th?
The 30th.
30th, okay.
I think it, yeah, What Scares You was the 30th, and that's right, you wind in on the Wes Craven.
And Eugene with the hat trick.
Yes, it's part three for Eugene as well.
That means you can't come back till next year now.
Eugene, thank you very much for joining us this evening. I'm glad that you were able to join us for this show.
Well, I did message you like a year ago to say, if something ever happens to George, I want to be involved.
And here you
just
are.
He means a lot to me.
This is all your fault. No, there's no blame.
No, this is not Cash's silver tongue to kill somebody. I brought it up, not him.
Okay, Eugene, have a great evening. We'll talk to you soon.
Cheers, sir.
Thank you very much, guys.
Take care.
See ya.
When you want to do something like make movies, you just want to make movies. You know, you don't grow up saying, gee, I want to make war movies, or I want to make jungle movies, or, you know, I just want to make movies.
We had an excellent time coming together and celebrating the memories that the films of Romero had impressed upon us while we grew up. His vision, his innovation within the horror genre was truly second to none.
I unfortunately had very religious parents, so I heard all the hatred about, you know, oh yeah, these perverted things from perverted people trying to turn our children against God and their family and blah blah blah. And all these horrible things about the people making these films. The man was a fucking prince. He was a fucking prince among men. And, you know, I don't think he had a bad bone in his body. I think he just wanted to tell a story. He wanted it to be a smart story. and he appreciated gore.
We were supposed to be on vacation. The end of our last vacation.
This wasn't fun. This wasn't a vacation for
the,
you.
The end of our last podcast warned our listeners, listen, we're not going to be back until the end of August. And then last week I get word that Romero is no more. I'm like, fuck. Well, that's going to cut our vacation
short.
He heard
you.
Yeah, exactly. That's going to cut our vacation short. We got to do this. We got to do this now.
Yeah, I don't know the details of his death. Do you have any idea how he died?
It was lung cancer.
It was lung cancer.
Lung cancer.
He was 77.
And it was really, apparently it was really quick.
He died at his house, surrounded by his family, listening to the soundtrack of one of his favorite movies called The Quiet Man.
Oh. So
yeah, he died listening to the soundtrack.
He died listening to a song about going home.
Yeah. Which,
you know.
However, the reason I wanted to do this is because, you know, here was a guy from Pittsburgh that created this subgenre, was always good with his fans, and in the end decided to fucking move his residence to Canada. So, and when Brian Stewart went to see him, you know, he's like, you know, we got this podcast, and we'd love a shout out, and everybody in the business right now, this fucking greedy business that I'm not really all about these days, are all about not doing things for their fans anymore. We can't personalize your poster. We can't personalize your DVD. We can't give you a shout-out for your show or your podcast. But this gentleman, in this case, was kind enough to break the rules and say, you know what, your fans, you got a show, and gave us a shout-out. And for that kindness, that's why we're doing this tonight.
On the other hand, it's given me a great career and a comfortable life and everything else, and so I can't really complain about it in that sense. And I do love it. I love the genre, so I don't, you know, it's cool.
Folks, we hope you've enjoyed our reflection on George Romero, including a short spotlight on Day of the Dead for our threequel theme. George's collaboration with Tom Savini and Stephen King has created some of the best horror films to come out of the 70s and 80s. Creepshow was my first horror film. It's Paul B's favorite horror film of all time. Season of the Witch, Monkey Shines, The Dark Half, Bruiser, Two Evil Eyes, all great films by the man that we urge you to check out if you haven't already. It was good to have the nefarious Paul B. back. I want to thank Nude for allowing a personal recording with just the two of us. It was fun watching Night of the Living Dead and Martin with her. I want to thank the macabre Todd Gervais for coming back and helping with the show. Thanks to longtime listener Eugene for calling in and being part of the discussion. Thanks to Clancy for sharing his experience on the Land of the Dead set. Look for a bald fucker serving food at the 26-minute mark of the film. That'll be him. And congratulations to our friend Elvis, who, since recording this with us, has become a brand new father. His wife Dawn has recently given birth to a healthy, beautiful baby girl. Nude and I went to see them at the hospital, and we're already discussing which horror movie she's going to watch first, and what age to start indoctrinating her into the genre. I'm thinking Poltergeist, because, you know, it has clowns, and kids love clowns.
You're out of your mind, Wang. God bless you!
This was our longest show since the Horror 101 Top 20. We will be back at the end of September to spotlight another Part 3 that's not titled a Part 3. Whatever could it be? We'll let you chew on that for a while and try to figure it out. And as always, for all of us here at Horror 101, this is Cash Wampum saying thanks for listening and reminding you that there's a horror movie out there that's just going to scare the hell out of you. And we're going to help you find it right here at Horror 101. Educating your fears.
What have you done?
So excited.
What have you done?
I'm so excited. He threw
four.
Man down.
Oh no! You know
you're excited. Check out this erection.
I got to go to bed. I can't watch this heathen film.
You've insulted me for the last time.